ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। नारायणं नमस्कृत्याम् नरं चैव नरोत्तमम् देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासाम् ततो जायामुदीरहे नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवतीरुत्तमा श्लोके भक्तिर्भवती नैष्ठिके कृष्णाय वासुदेवाय देवकीनन्दनाय च नन्दगोपकुमाराय गोविन्दाय नमो नमः।
श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 83 टेक्स्ट 40। महिष्य ऊचु भौमाम नियत चगनम युदीते न रुद्ध जात्वा नाक्षिति जया जता राजो कन्या निर्मुच्य संस्मृति विमोक्ष अनुस्मृतः पदम भोजा परिनाया या आप्त कामा महिष्य ऊचु भौमाम निहत्य शगनम युधीते नरुद्धा जात्वा नाक्षितिजया जातो राजकन्या निर्मुच्य संस्मृतिर्विमोक्षम् अनुस्मृतिः पदम् भोजा परिनायाय आप्तकामा महिष्य ऊचु भौमम् निहित्य च गणम् युद्धते न रुद्धा ज्ञातवा नाक्षितिजाय जातराजकन्या निर्मुच्य स्मृतिर्विमोक्षमनुस्मृतिः पदम् भुजम् परिनाय य आप्तकामा मदजीस महिष्य उचु द क्वींस सेड भौमम द डीमन भौमा निहत्य किलिंग स along with Ganam, his followers, Yudhi, in battle, Tena, by him, Bhoma, Ruddha, imprisoned, Jatva, knowing, Atha, then, Na, us, Shitijaya, during Bhoma's conquest of the earth, Jita, defeated, Raja, of kings, Kanya, the daughters, Nirmuchya, releasing, Samsriti, from material existence, Vimoksham, the source of liberation, Anusmritihi, constantly remembering, Padam Bhujam, his lotus feet, Parininya, married, Yaha, who, Apta Kamaha, already fulfilled in all desires. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Rohini Devi, speaking for the other queen, said, after killing Bhaumasura and his followers, the Lord found us in the demon's prison and could understand that we were daughters of the kings whom Bhauma had defeated during his conquest of the earth. The Lord set us free, and because we had been constantly meditating upon his lotus feet, the source of liberation from material entanglement, he agreed to marry us through his every desire is already fulfilled. Purport. Rohini Devi was one of the nine queens questioned by Draupadi in text 6 and 7, and thus it is assumed that she speaks here representing the 16,099 other queens. Srila Prabhupada confirms this in Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead.
Om Jnana Timirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namine Namaste Saraswati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patita Nam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Namo Mahavadanyaya Krishna Prema Pradayate Krishnaya Krishna Chaitanya Namine Gauratvishe Namaha E Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dinabandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Brindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Hare Krishna. So we are on the last few verses of this beautiful chapter, which is discussing the interactions of Draupadi with the various queens of Krishna. And herein we have this wonderful discussion between Rohini, who is representing the 16,099 queens. And they were the queens which were primarily married
to Krishna, after Krishna released them from the prison of Bhaumasura or Narkasura. This whole beautiful story comes in the 59th chapter of the 10th canto about Krishna killing Bhaumasura and Narkasura or Narkasura. So herein it is very, very wonderfully explained by this very honest queen. He said that they were all imprisoned. They were all imprisoned by Narkasura. And Narkasura had traveled all over the earth planet. And he had defeated many kings, many sages, many very great devotees. And he had captured all their daughters. Very sad. So they were actually captured. They were imprisoned. And Bhauma had a very, very wrong intentions of doing so. And you can imagine their destitute, their helpless condition of these girls. But by nature, the females are by nature comparatively weak. They need to be protected. Now here was a situation where Bhauma took away all the protection that they had from their fathers and their relatives. And they were staying alone. And in that very, very precarious situation, they were intensely praying in desperation. And it is said that they were meditating upon the lotus feet of Krishna. Now the question arises that, did they know Krishna? And how were they meditating upon Krishna? Only if they knew Krishna, they could meditate upon Krishna. So how is it they meditate upon Krishna? Because they were not actually personally knowing Krishna. They didn't know who Krishna is. But it's explained by our acharyas. Very interesting. This also appears in the 59th chapter. That the gopis of Vrindavan, who were very, very keen to associate with Krishna. When Krishna left Vrindavan, Krishna arranged that these gopis, they were transformed as girls to various kings all over the earth planet. They were daughters of various sages, various kings, various royal orders. So the same gopis of Vrindavan, they were all over the earth. Because Krishna can do anything. Krishna left Vrindavan and he became Mathura Krishna and Dwarka Krishna. And similarly, as Krishna from Vrindavan Krishna became Mathura Krishna and Dwarka Krishna, these gopis of Vrindavan, they were transferred to be daughters of various kings. So they were always meditating upon Krishna's lotus feet. Krishna was not unknown to them. So when they were queens, when they were princesses, and when they were captured, in their heart they were always meditating upon Krishna's lotus feet. So very, very interesting. And then it said that Krishna came and he released us from the prison. And then we married. So the interesting thing, they say that we were always meditating upon Krishna's lotus feet. So the important part that has been mentioned by this queen here is constant meditation on Krishna's lotus feet. What is so special about Krishna's lotus feet? The Bhagavatam is constantly teaching us very, very important lessons of life. And if you see the situation of these queens, it is similar to our situation. We are all bound in the prison of Bhavarog, right? We are all staying in this Durga, this prison house. Maya jale baddha hoile, acho meche kachaloye, ekono chaitanya pe radha madhav naam karore. It is Bhakti Thakur writes that Maya jale baddha hoye, that you are being Maya jal. Maya jal means the network of Maya. Maya jale baddha hoye, that you have been bound by Maya jal, baddha. And you are struggling, acho meche kachaloye. You are struggling in this Maya, just like some insect gets stuck into the web of the spider. How he struggles. And all of us are struggling in this Maya Jal. act on a chaitanya pe. And but once you become really conscious, act on a chaitanya pe. Once you become conscious, really conscious, then you realize Radha Madhav Nam Karore. That you start chanting the names of Radha Madhav or Radha Krishna or Radha Gopinath. So similarly, the queens here were bound for years. And in their bounded condition, they were constantly meditating upon Krishna's lotus feet. But Krishna didn't come immediately. Just like we have been very fortunate that in our bound condition, in our suffering condition, we have been suffering for many, many lifetimes, my dear friends. Bahunam janmanam ante. Jnanam amam prapadyante vasudeva sarvamiti sa mahatma sudurlabha. Bahunam janmanam ante. Our many, many lifetimes, please understand, it's not a joke for lifetimes to suffer. And then in this lifetime, ekono chaitanya pe. We have got some chaitanya, some intelligence. And we got the chance to chant the names of Radha Madhav. To chant the names Hare Krishna. Very, very wonderful, merciful situation that we are in. But Krishna did not appear to the queens immediately. They were struggling. Can you imagine? It was a dark, dingy, very, very scary place that they were. Prison is not a place that people would like to be in, isn't it? It's a scary place. I went to prison only once. Not as a prisoner. Sorry, don't take me wrong. I went to prison too. We were part of the prison ministry. We were trying to, distribute prasad, and I went to the prison. And it was such a depressing situation, to say the least. And then we were realizing that we are in a similar situation, or rather we are also in a prison. It's just that we do not know, because it's an invisible prison that we all are in. We don't see the bars, and we don't see the police constables and everything. And we think we are free. But we are in a very, very precarious situation. We are bound. Maya jale baddha hoye. We are bound. Our senses are bound. But in this situation, to meditate upon Krishna's lotus feet. Nitai pada kamala, koti chandra shushitala, echayai jagat judai. He said, if you meditate upon the lotus feet of Nityananda, which is like millions of moons, then the blazing forest fire in our hearts is extinguished. And when meditate upon the lotus feet of Lord Nityananda. And similarly, the same lotus feet of Krishna. So what is the speciality of Krishna's lotus feet? We'll spend some time in discussing about Krishna's lotus feet, because it is explained that every great soul is constantly meditating upon Krishna's lotus feet. Jipada paya Shiva Shivatva. How does Shiva get his Shivatva? Bhagavan Thakur explains. By meditating upon Krishna's lotus feet. Rama, the goddess of fortune, is constantly meditating upon Krishna's lotus feet. Lord Brahma. So all these great souls, they are not fools that meditate upon somebody's feet. It must be a special feet. Like even if you want to admire beauty, usually we admire beauty by seeing somebody's face. But here is explained that the real beauty is in Krishna's feet. Of course, the face is very, very beautiful, but the feet is something that we need to meditate upon constantly. If you want to meditate upon something, it is the lotus feet of Krishna. And why is it? Because this feet has beautiful marks in them. Like if you try to see our feet, most of the time it is all dried up, cracked up feet that we have. Not lotus at all. And there are no marks. But Krishna's lotus feet has beautiful marks. And these marks are not just there because they just happen to be there. There is a purpose. And we will discuss why these marks are there. Everything that is happening in the spiritual world has a purpose. And if we understand, if we are conscious, if we are mindful of these things, it's very, very important. Krishna says, yukta ahara viharasya, right? This verse in Gita, yukta ahara. He said everything has to be done in yukta. The right amount of sleep, the right amount of recreation, the right amount of food. What is the meaning of this word yukta? Most of the time we say yukta means the right proportion. But the Sanskrit word yukta is a combination of three meanings. Yukta means the right proportion, means the right quantity, the right quality, and third and most important, mindfulness. To be mindful of what you are doing, to be conscious of what you are doing. Because this society is a society of Krishna consciousness. If you are not conscious of what we are doing, why we are doing, then what is the use? We just live life the way it comes. So when we know that there are special marks in Krishna's lotus feet, there is a purpose. So Krishna, it is said that Krishna has a lotus in one of the marks is the half moon. Krishna has the half moon on his on lotus feet. So while we are discussing this, let us meditate upon this beautiful feet of Krishna. Yeah? And one of the symbols in Krishna's feet is the half moon. And what does the half moon signify? This half moon signifies that even devatas like Lord Shiva, they take this half moon, which is the lotus feet, upon his head. The half moon of Krishna's lotus feet is taken by Lord Shiva upon his head. It also signifies that if one meditates upon, one decorates the lotus feet in his heart, then he will become as exalted as Lord Shiva. That's the significance of the half moon. And just like the moon extinguishes all the burning fire, the moon is very cooling. So if you take the shelter of the lotus feet of Krishna, which is like the moon, it will eradicate all the burning in our hearts, the threefold miseries in our hearts. So this moon, when you see the moon in Krishna's feet, let us understand that this is the significance of the moon in Krishna's feet. Then Krishna has a bow. Now why is the bow there? It shows that those who are stupefied by the material world remains motionless like a target and do not come to the feet. Like how the bow, it has a target. And some people who are stupefied or you are stunned by the material energy, they will not come to the lotus feet of Krishna. You cannot be stupefied by Krishna's material energy. You need to be stupefied by Krishna's spiritual energy. And further it is explained, the mind of the devotees, when it meets, the mind is constantly meditating upon the Krishna's lotus feet, which is the target. When the mind of the devotee meets the target, that is the lotus feet of Krishna, then what happens? There is condensation of prema. And the result of when the mind of the devotee is combined with the target of Krishna's feet, the result is the incessant tears flow from the eyes when this meet. But the bow is signifying that. The target of Krishna's, of the devotee's heart is the feet of Krishna. Beautiful explanation. And there's a beautiful deep purpose of each of these things. The second thing is there's a ambara or sky. The symbol of sky in Krishna's lotus feet. And the purpose of this is that just like the feet are all pervasive in all creation, just as the sky is all pervasive, the feet of Krishna is all pervasive. And this was beautifully explained in the beautiful story of Vamanadev. That the Krishna's is all pervasive. Trivikrama. His feet are everywhere. And we want to meditate upon Krishna's feet. They are all over, just like the sky. And then we have the cow hoofs or the gospada or the hoof print of a calf. And what is the significance of that? Significance is that once somebody meditates upon this lotus feet of Krishna, the ocean like suffering that we all are going through, which is so vast, we are suffering as if we are in the ocean since millenniums. But this ocean of suffering is reduced to the size of a hoofprint of a calf. What a magic. It's sheer magic, isn't it? And this is not just poetic, my dear friends. It's not that it's just poetry. Oh, it is nice poetry. That this hoof print is, I mean, this whole ocean is becomes a size of a hoof print of a calf. It is real. It is what the devotees experience. And then we have, on the lotus feet of Krishna, a fish. The fish signifies that just like the fish cannot stay away from the water, similarly the devotees cannot stay away from the lotus feet of Krishna, which are like the water. They constantly meditating upon the lotus feet of Krishna, just the devotees. And also means it's a multiple purpose of the fish being there. Just like the fish is very, very flickle in the water. You have seen the fish going here and there. And till the time our mind is flickle, the fish will always be looking here and there. But once it becomes fixed up, once the fish becomes fixed, then it achieves the food which is there in the waters. Similarly, a devotee has to be fixed. The flickle mind cannot meditate upon Krishna. If you want to meditate upon Krishna's feet, it has to be focused. Constantly focusing on Krishna's feet. Only then we can achieve Krishna's lotus feet. And that is explained that there is also a Ankusha or the god. This mark indicates the meditation of lotus feet brings the elephant of devotee's mind under control and keeps them the right path. The mind is like an elephant. It's so powerful, running here and there. And we find it difficult to control the elephant. Very difficult to control the elephant. It's huge. Colossal. But once we have the small god, this elephant driver has the god and just pokes the god, the elephant comes under control. That's why the god is present in Krishna's lotus feet. Just to show that if you meditate upon Krishna's lotus feet, the elephant-like mind of ours can easily be brought under control. And then we have the thunderbolt and the lotus. The lotus shows that how the devotees are constantly drinking the bee-like nectar from Krishna's lotus feet. And like that, we have so many wonderful presents. I mean, it can be a whole lecture on this. But the whole purpose why we are discussing this, that why is it the queens? Why is it that Lord Brahma? Why is it by Dhruva Maharaj, by Prahlad Maharaj, talking about Krishna's lotus feet? Where is this lotus feet of Krishna, which has the supreme power of delivering us? For freeing us, as the queen explained, that we got freed from this whole prison, and Krishna Krishna came and married us. Now let us understand what was the feelings that the queens, I mean the princesses, were experiencing before Krishna. They were experiencing intense insecurity. Can you imagine? They were very insecure, very fearful, very lonely. And as devotees, many, many times we experience these feelings. We experience intense insecurity in Krishna consciousness. We experience intense fear and loneliness. And why is it that we experience these feelings of insecurity, fear and loneliness? The reason is that many times we are not situated in our natural position, natural platform. The queen, the princesses were in a very, very unnatural environment. And because they were in their unnatural environment, they were naturally very fearful. Like if we are naturally belong to the land, if we go to space, if we go to water, we will be very fearful, we will be very insecure. Why is it? Because we are not in our natural environment. And similarly, I remember many, many years back when Tamal Krishna Goswami Maharaj had come to our temple, a statement which he made had such intense impact, very simple statement, but it made a lot of impact in my heart, which I thought I'll be sharing. He said, all of us executing Krishna consciousness, we all are chanting Hare Krishna, we all are following four acre principles, and that process is same for everybody. It's not different for different people. It's the same process. But till the time, he said, till the time we are not situated in our natural and platform of existence. That means if we are supposed to be renunciates, and we find ourselves in a particular ashram which is not about renunciation, then we will not be happy in Krishna consciousness even though we are chanting Hare Krishna. I said, if we are supposed to be in the married ashram, he was explaining, and we somehow find ourselves in the renounced ashram, no matter how much of a chanting we do, no matter how much of our association we do, we will not be happy in our Krishna consciousness. Because we are not in our natural environment, he said. He stressed this point again and again. So we need to find, he said, our natural environment. And the moment we find our natural environment, we'll be very happy. Just like we use this example in our preaching, that a fish, you can give the fish the best of stereo systems, the best of things to read and everything, but the fish needs a simple plain water. You can give all sorts of fancy things, but fish will not be happy. Similarly, as a devotee, we may having all sorts of fancy Krishna consciousness around us. The best of tikas of our Goswamis. The best of devotional service. The best of association. But what we need, the basic thing that we need to survive in Krishna consciousness. One thing is to flourish in Krishna consciousness. But one thing is to survive in Krishna consciousness. We will not flourish till the time we don't survive. How can we flourish if we are not even surviving in Krishna consciousness? And the fish will not survive without water. And similarly, my dear friends, till the time we are not situated in our natural environment. In the terms of our natural varna and which in terms of natural ashram, we will not be happy. Till the time we are not situated in a natural occupation. A brahmachari, one and a half months back, I was with Shivaram Swami at Hungary. And he was explaining very honestly, amazing leader, one of the top leaders of our society. He was saying that because he's writing a book on Varnashram, he's going deep into the Varnashram in our society. He's writing detailed books. One book is already out and he's writing five more books. See, he was explaining that even though I'm a sannyasi, he was telling me, but by nature I'm a Vaishya. So I'm a sannyasi on one side, but I'm a Vaishya. So wherever I go, I see money. We can make money here. And till the time if I'm not situated in this natural propensity that I have, I will not be happy because that's the way I am naturally situated. That's the way I am being programmed by Krishna. That I am naturally a Vaishya. Even though I'm a sannyasi, which is very good as an ashram, I'm a sannyas. But as a varna, I'm a Vaishya. So as a devotees need to find their varna and ashram properly. And they need to be situated in their varna ashram. Otherwise, no matter how much ever they try, even if there are 64 rounds, 192 rounds of the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, the best of association of devotees, the best of yatras, the best of deity worship, he was explaining, they will not be happy. In due course, that this dissatisfaction in their hearts will eat them up. And they will need to change. So they need to be, he said, they need to be honest with the society in which they are living, and then to be honest with themselves. The queens here were very, very honest. Please understand. They said that we are princesses, we are insecure, Krishna, we are meditating upon your lotus feet, and the purpose of meditating upon your lotus feet is that we want to marry you. They are very honest. I said, we want you as our husband because we want to be secure under your shelter. And because they were honest, Krishna reciprocated with them in great honesty and he married them. Even though it appeared to be very, very, and how can somebody marry so many queens? They were always thinking. But they were honest. They said, Krishna, we want to marry you. many a times as devotees, at least I find many times myself, and maybe some people whom I try to help, that they are not very honest with themselves. They try to have what you call this Pondraka-like facade, or what we call the false facade of something that they are not. And for years they are having that facade. But how long can you be on a facade? Facade is after all temporary. You need to remove that facade and you need to be your natural self, isn't it? It's required. You can't be an actor all the time. You can be acting when you're supposed to be an actor, but you can't be acting in your life. And similarly as devotees, we need to learn from these queens that they were very honest. Krishna, we are insecure, we are fearful, we are lonely, and we need to marry you. It may in one sense sound very shameless, these girls just said, Krishna, we want to marry you. And what is this, these girls are telling Krishna, we want to marry you? But they said, we need security. If we want to be functional in this world, we need to be secure. Right now we are in a very, very artificial situation. We are insecure. We need security of your lotus feet. And once we are secured in your lotus feet, serving lotus feet, we can be wonderful queens and we can do our duties properly. So we need to learn this lesson. The first lesson that we learn from the queens, this beautiful, the 16,099 queens, they're teaching a beautiful lesson to all of us. The need to be honest. Take guidance. Do deep introspection. Do deep soul searching exercises in your life. Don't live a cheating life. Many times we may be living a cheating life. And that's why even though this process is susukam kartum avyayam, it's simply joyful process. What is that bhajan? Keval Ananda Kand, right? That bhajan. It's Keval Ananda Kand. But why is it that this, we chant Hare Krishna and be happy, it is said. Susukam kartum avyayam, it is said. Keval Ananda Kand, it is said. Why is it that there's so much of bliss and happiness in this process? Why is it that few of us, it includes me, we are not experiencing the bliss. We are still trying to live a facade life. Be honest. Don't have unrealistic expectation for yourself. This is what I am. At the same time, don't be shameless. Krishna is not telling you to be shameless, but to be honest and to be shameful of our negativities. That's what is required. That yes, this is what I am. This is sad. That I am the way I am. And I need to work upon it. But at the same time, this is what I am. Don't be hypocritical. Very dangerous. The queens were very, very honest. And because they were very, very honest, what was the result of it? Their honesty, their non-duplicitous nature, mixed with the process of bhakti, of meditating on Krishna's lotus feet, what happened with this combination? Bhajana Kriya was there and their heart was very pure, very honest. Bhajana Kriya will work honestly. The process of bhajan will work provided you are honest at your heart. So because they were honest, the result was they actually became the queens of Krishna. Amazing reciprocation of Krishna. Krishna said, yeah, fine. He transferred them to Dwarka. And he said, I want to get married. And in one shot, got married to all the 16,099 princesses. And in a few days, they found themselves to be the Patranis, the queens of Dwarka. And that is what we all can inherit as sadhakas. If we are honest, and we are honestly performing bhajan of Krishna, then what we can inherit is the spiritual world. That's the importance of being very honest. And let us understand How is Krishna reciprocating? In this material world, many of us, we are all tuned in, if you analyze, we are tuned in to this particular station. Like a radio. Radio tunes into a station. Similarly, we all are tuned into this particular station of WIIFM. Now you will say, well, what is this WIIFM? Right from early morning we get up, till the time we sleep and everything in between, we are all constantly tuned into this station of WIIFM. That what it means is, what is it for me? What is it in for me? Right the time we get up, everything we are doing, the type of toothpaste that we use, I was discussing with somebody yesterday, that we want to select a toothpaste which will give us some gratification. So we use the particular, because there is a whole, you know, what is toothpaste? It's just something that we use for 3 minutes. And you know how much, it's a $350 billion industry. A toothpaste. Something that people use for 3 to 4 minutes. If you are really a rigorous toothbrusher, you might use it for 5 minutes at the most. But why is it there is a whole industry there? Because we all are thinking, what suits me? If you go to a shopping mall, there's a whole rack in front of you of at least 50 types of toothpaste. Why? But right from the beginning in the morning, we are thinking, what's in it for me? The type of clothes you wear, not so much for brahmacharis. Maybe for some brahmacharis also sometimes. Right, the clothes you wear, the food you eat, the people you meet, the people you interact with, you are constantly thinking, you may be thinking always, what's in it for me? We will meet those people where we find there's something in it for me. We'll eat that food where you are convinced there's something in it for me. We'll go to that place. We'll go to that discourse when we find there's something in it for me. Now, it may not be completely wrong to have this understanding. Because naturally we need to be very practical. But what this concept has given rise to is an extremely self-centered, selfish society. Everybody is thinking, can you imagine if everybody is thinking WIIFM? What's in it for me? Then will the society run? Because there's never that anything that everything that we do, there's not always something in for us. We have to do something for somebody else. And that's what life is all about, isn't it? Life is not always about how I can be pleased. Life is how many a times how I can please others. So if we are constantly thinking of what's in it for me, then we become a very selfish driven society. And the sad part is that this phenomenon many times creeps in devotee sangha also. Our interactions are all based upon, many a times, not how I can help him to remember Krishna and how I can serve him. But many a times, go deep in your hearts and analyze it. If it is not, then you are healthy. If it is, then you need to go do some deep introspection. Many a times we are always thinking, what's in it for me in this? And if there's something interesting, we will have complete focus in it. But if this Bhagavatam is not, there's nothing much for me in it. Or this particular, you know, thing that this service that people are doing, there's not much for me in it. We are not bothered about it. We become very self-centered. This selfishness or self-centeredness is very, very dangerous. Krishna, on the other side, when we are analyzing it, he could have easily said, these queens, you know, are praying, 16,099 of them. What's in it for me? Nothing. What will I gain? Nothing. Krishna is not going to gain. Krishna is Atmaram. He is self-satisfied within. What is it for me? But Krishna was driven by the intense prayers. Because Krishna wanted. And how does Krishna think? The healthy way of thinking? The unhealthy way of thinking is, what's in it for me? But the healthy way of thinking is, what can I do for you? Not what's in it for me, but what can I do for you, Prabhu? What can I do for you, my dear friend? And Krishna is always thinking in these terms, what can I do for you? He saw this princess is intensely crying, desperate, insecure, fearful. And his heart got drawn. So I need to help them. He could have said, what is in it for me? By the way, what's in it for Krishna anyways in any one of our lives? But Krishna is very, very wonderfully reciprocating. What was it for Srila Prabhupada to go to America? There was nothing for him, please understand. If Prabhupada were to ask this question, what's in it for me to go to America? The reply was, nothing, Prabhupada, there was nothing for you to go to America. Prabhupada was a scholar, happy person, pure devotee of the Lord, saying in Vrindavan. But Prabhupada never asked this question, what's in it for me? Prabhupada always asked the question, what's in it for the society's benefit? And that is the way Krishna thinks, that is the way Srila Prabhupada is thinking, and that is the way we all need to think in our lives. What is it that I can do for others? And that is a selfless society. More and more, if you see through these Facebooks, through these selfies, it's all a self-driven society. What's in it for me? I feel sad today. You put a photograph on your social media. I am happy today. You are so much of I conscious because you are so much thinking about what's in it for me. This whole selfie culture, it is crazy in the society outside. Nothing against for people who are into this selfie business. But just analyze it. What is this whole selfie things? It's all about yourself. You click a photograph and put it on something. This is the way I did things. Because you think that the whole world should know what I am doing. Because I am important. It's the I-driven society. But the whole society is we-driven. That's the Vaishnava society. Let's not this disease of I-ness. Let's not this disease of this me-centricness come into our devotee sangha. Because we came to the devotee sangha to get rid of all these things. Many of us were frustrated with this living outside. That's why we took shelter of Krishna. Let not that disease come here also. The fact is, if you are not careful, it is coming and it will come. It is not coming. It is coming. We are driven. We all like to sit in our own chambers and focus on my service because there is something in it for me. We don't care what's happening outside. Because if I do this, there's something in it for me. Right? So a particular department head is thinking about his department because there's something in it for me. But while you are taking care of your own department, while you're taking care of your own services, you should be equally concerned that your real service is to assist Srila Prabhupada in preaching the mission of Lord Chaitanya. But we many times become too narrow-minded, too self-centered in our own Dr. Frog and the well mentality. My well and I am Dr. Frog there. And we forget the whole ocean of service outside. Krishna is not like that. Krishna is constantly reciprocating with every single devotee. What is that verse? I have been reciprocating with everyone since time immemorial, right? Krishna says. Since time immemorial, Krishna has been doing what? Simply reciprocating with devotees. Krishna has never thought, what's in it for me? Because Krishna doesn't need anything. If he wants, he said, there's nothing in it for me because I am Atmaram. But Krishna never says that. Krishna says, I am dependent upon the love of the devotees. That's the way Krishna thinks. So what really drew my attention to in this verse is that Krishna didn't just ignore. And they, these princes are calling. It's okay. I'm so busy. I'm already having, you know, so many beautiful queens in the form of Rukmini, Satyabhama. I don't need any more such queens. And they anyway, they are in trouble. Who wants to help people in trouble? Right? Many of us, we want to be with people who are happy people, right? And we want to be with people who are happy party people. Who wants to go to a place where people are troubled? But Krishna and Srila Prabhupada wanted to be in a place where people were most troubled. Krishna went to this prison house. He was not bothered to really kill the Narkasur, but he wanted to rescue this desperate princesses. And that drew him to this place, and he did all fight, and he killed Narkasur, Bhamasur, just to get these princesses. So let us all really take this beautiful lessons of Bhagavatam in our lives. This queen, by this one statement of hers in this verse, is teaching a profound lesson. Let us all not be tuned to this WIIFM radio station. What's in it for me? But let us be tuned into this understanding of what can I do for you, Krishna? What can I do for you, Srila Prabhupada? What can I do for you, my dear Prabhu? My dear Mataji, how can I serve you? That is the understanding we need. And if that is the understanding, then we are really understanding the Bhagavatam. Then we are really living the Bhagavatam. We are not just hearing Bhagavatam, but we are living the Bhagavatam. And let us not just hear Bhagavatam, but let us live the Bhagavatam in our lives. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Any questions? We wish the Brahmacharis a wonderful retreat. All of you are going on a wonderful retreat, and we wish that you all meditate upon how we can serve Prabhupada, how we can serve each other, and how we can serve this congregation. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki, Granth Raj Srimad Bhagavatam ki.
Thank you. When we are like a devotee,